Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, October 5th, 2018. And the B in Peter B. Collins stands for bummed out right now. It was going to take a miracle, and the miracle did not occur. Republicans who gave us a hint that they might oppose Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court proved to be once again tools. Tools of the Republican establishment, tools of the oligarchy that is increasingly powerful in this country, and tools of Donald Trump, showing that they too are infected by what I call the Trump virus. And if you've heard me talk about it, I describe it as equal parts compulsive lying, a total disregard for whatever the truth might be, and misogyny, a deep-seated hatred for women. Now, does Susan Collins qualify as a misogynist? No, she's an enabler of the misogynist actions of her political leadership. And she had a clear choice today. And she chose to side with Kavanaugh, corporate interests, a government that is not responsive to the people. And she is embracing the denial of the obvious evidence that is available to every American that Brett Kavanaugh is deeply unsuited to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court. But political alliances and ideology have prevailed today. So what happened is that at about 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Susan Collins went to the Senate floor. She spoke for 45 minutes. She weaved back and forth, trying to tap into all of these sentiments are out there, trying to show how wise she has been in deliberating on these issues. And we know that her fakes in criticizing Trump for his gruesome attacks on Christine Blasey Ford at his mob rally in Mississippi this week. Yeah, Susan Collins can criticize that and then vote for this guy's nominee. And Jeff Flake is no better. And I was not fooled by his maneuver a week ago when he called for this ridiculous charade of an FBI additional investigation. They talked to 9 people. They did not attempt to get to the truth. They went out with the mission of proving that there was no corroborating evidence for Blasey Ford's allegations. They didn't even touch on Julie Swetnick's accusations. And they largely dismissed Debbie Ramirez. Sorry, Debbie. You know, not enough corroboration because we didn't talk to the 20 witnesses you said could vouch for the story that you told. So this is a huge setback for women's rights, for the Me Too movement. And as you know, I have some issues about the process of using Me Too to expose predators, because there are some people who weren't as bad of predators as others, and the punishment should fit the crime. But I do support, without much hesitation or reservation, the right of women to speak up, the right of women to seek protection from predators in the future, and to keep a predator off the Supreme Court where he can rule in favor selectively. Because if a predator comes before the court and he or she happens to be brown or black, can we expect Brett Kavanaugh to think about this experience, to think about the rights of the accused, innocent until proven guilty? Nope. And so we have Flake and Collins, who lived up to my expectations of their true sentiments and their true colors. And this leaves us with a very dark day. And let me tell you, friends, that this has been extremely difficult for me, and I expect for you as well. The last week I've been preoccupied by this. I want to acknowledge to my subscribers I didn't do any in-depth interviews this week because I was focused on providing daily coverage of this very important set of issues. And because I've felt a little bit adrift. So I'll recover over the weekend and we'll get back into action and bring you our usual diet of daily news and comment podcasts and interview podcasts as well. So I want to take a moment here to extol two women who, at least in this moment, distinguished themselves. I apologize because yesterday I think I called Senator Murkowski of Alaska Linda. Her first name is Lisa. But I give her credit. I did not expect her to stand against the Kavanaugh nomination. She said she made up her mind at the last minute as she went onto the Senate floor this morning for the cloture vote. And it, for a moment, led me to hope that Susan Collins was going to have that same cathartic moment as she entered the Senate chambers, but no, it wasn't to be. And so this Republican senator from Alaska, who got the job because her dad had it before her, who had to run as a write-in candidate last time because she got squeezed out in the primary? Well, Lisa Murkowski distinguished herself today. And yesterday, it was Heidi Heitkamp. And I don't know Senator Heitkamp at all. I've never met her. I have followed her conservative votes, her vote for Neil Gorsuch. And I expected under this the conditions that she faces, she is 12 points behind her Republican opponent up for re-election in November in a state that Trump carried by double digits. And so political realities led many people to absolve her and say, well, you know, she's got to hold on to her seat. And they say the same things about yellow-bellied Joe Manchin from West Virginia. But Heidi Heitkamp may have made the decision that will make her a single-term senator. She may go down to defeat in November. And this is one of the big questions that I can't answer here today. But will this whole Kavanaugh moment cause Democratic voters to surge to the polls in November out of anger, out of a sense of violation and victimization? Or will the championing of the grudges of white men by the Republicans drive turnout for the GOP? And frankly, I don't think the polls can capture this. It's too fluid at this moment. Maybe we'll see some indication right before the November 6th election. But this Kavanaugh confirmation process will have an impact in November. I can't predict what it will be. And we're going to be living with him and this ugly legacy for quite some time. And Brett, or is it Bart, or Barf, as a last-ditch effort to talk to some of these Republicans who are on the fence, he published a column in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. And he continued the kind of spin that makes him a non-credible person. You can count on me to be the same kind of judge and person I've been for my entire 28-year legal career. I was very emotional last Thursday, more so than I ever have been. I might have been too emotional at times. I know that my tone was sharp, and I said a few things I should not have said. I hope everyone can understand that I was there as a son, husband, and dad. What kind of bullshit is that? We're all a son or daughter of somebody. Many of us are a husband or a dad to somebody. Well, what the hell does that mean? It's just an emotional sop. And it's a way to try to excuse that he wasn't acting with judicial demeanor and temperament when he unloaded on Senate Democrats last Thursday. He went on to say that his words during the hearing reflected my overwhelming frustration at being wrongly accused, without corroboration, of horrible conduct completely contrary to my record and character. He vowed to remain impartial and emphasized his belief that an independent and impartial judiciary is essential to our constitutional republic. Now, these are not lies, okay? But this is spin. This is bullshit. This is dissembling. In an attempt to persuade people who are predisposed to believe him that he deserves this promotion to the Supreme Court. And I pointed out a couple of times over the past week some of the maneuvers of the far right messaging attacks on Christine Blasey Ford that didn't show up in the corporate media or even on Fox News. And Michael Savage, the right-wing nut who hosts a national radio show from here in San Francisco, I'd love to evict him if we could. Well, he claimed that Christine Blasey Ford ran a CIA internship program at Stanford. There isn't one. That her brother's former law firm created Fusion GPS. He left there in 2004. And the firm he worked for simply hired Fusion GPS to obscure the fact that it was the payments were coming from the DNC and the Clinton campaign. Also, that the firm was located in the same building with a CIA-aligned company run by her father, Ralph Blasey Jr., and that her grandfather was a CIA agent named Nicholas Deke. Well, if you go to Snopes, you can work through the claims yourselves. None of this is true. Her father has no relationship with the companies that are mentioned, and the one he does work for has no known connection to the CIA. And when Savage launched this, Alex Jones picked it up, and he ran with it. And I mention this because if you're one of my listeners, there's a very good chance that you are so offended by Michael Savage and Alex Jones that you don't venture to find out what they're saying. And I don't blame you for that, but you deserve to know. And there were other false allegations. Trump picked up this claim that George Soros was paying protesters. And I want to take a moment to thank the people who went to Washington, descended on the Capitol to protest this nomination and confirmation process. Thousands of people participated, and there were 100 people who came all the way from Alaska, busloads of people who came from Maine to try to persuade Susan Collins. There were many people who were arrested. And during that process, when people thought they were going to be arrested, there were some groups that passed out cash to the protesters. And it was intended as bail money if they got popped. But this was picked up on by right-wingers who said, look, that's Soros money being paid to these protesters. And it's a very convoluted path from George Soros's bank account to the cash being dispensed to protesters of the Senate hearings. But that's how it works, and it does create an effective fog, a right-wing generated fog that infects a lot of people. And they pick up on it and they believe it. Didn't fool retired Justice John Paul Stevens. He made some guarded comments in Florida yesterday that he had been supporting Brett Kavanaugh based on his judicial experience and temperament. But he said, I've changed my views for reasons that really have no relationship to his intellectual ability or his record as a federal judge. I think his performance during the hearings caused me to change my mind. And here's an unwelcome comment. Phil Bredesen is the former governor of Tennessee who is running for the U.S. Senate seat, and he's opposing right-wing nut Marsha Blackburn. And so to try to play it down the middle, he said that he's made an agonizing decision and he would have cast a vote in favor of Brett Kavanaugh. Now, I'll note that Phil Bredesen is a nominal Democrat, and I expect that he will win this race from Tennessee this year. I can't predict it, but that's my expectation at this moment, and I think that epitomizes the kind of Democrat who will populate the blue wave that so many people are hoping for. And to me, the blue wave is less likely now because the white male base of Trump has been stirred to action. And I think they're going to turn out in big numbers. I don't know about the Democrats. And I don't know about the millennials. And we've got a treat for you at the end of the podcast about trying to get millennials to vote. Now, one operation that originated with activists in Maine, and I commend them, is that they have raised nearly $2 million to oppose Susan Collins if she runs for re-election in 2020. The average contribution is a Bernie Sanders number, $28.40. Now, they got to be careful, and I'm sure they've got some lawyers who are helping them avoid falling into a trap where this appears to be blackmail or what the Republicans call bribery. And Collins herself said, "I consider this quid pro quo fundraising to be the equivalent of an attempt to bribe me to vote against Judge Kavanaugh. I think it demonstrates the new lows to which the judge's opponents have stooped." So I do commend this kind of activism. Again, consult your lawyers so that you don't create legal problems. So this claim by Trump and others that the protesters are being paid is really silly. And there are no bits of evidence to support this at all. And hundreds of people have been arrested in protesting this nominee and this ugly and unfair process that has been used to jam him on the Supreme Court. And while I've already talked about the false claims about George Soros, one of the things that is occurring here is projection by Trump. Because we know that extras were hired to populate Trump Tower on the day when he cruised down the escalator to announce that he was running for president to stop rapists from coming over the Mexican border. And in recent months, I have seen Craigslist ads in both Montana and Las Vegas that were published a week before Trump rallies were scheduled, offering to pay people to populate the crowds at those rallies. Now, I'm unable to tell you how many people actually responded and to what extent the Trump rally crowds are completely fake. Certainly, he does have diehard supporters who show up, but some of them are paid. A jury in Chicago got it right, returning a guilty verdict for second-degree murder against former Chicago cop Jason Van Dyke, who pumped 16 bullets into 17-year-old Laquan McDonald. This was an ugly case from the start, where Mayor Rahm Emanuel colluded with the cops to prevent the release of the incriminating videotape. And this trial played out as Jason Van Dyke clinged to his lies that he was threatened by McDonald. And I'm glad the jury got it right. Here in San Francisco, the police are being accused by the ACLU that in a recent sweep of drug sellers, that they focused entirely on people who are African American. And here in San Francisco, the population is only 6% black. But they went out and arrested 37 people, all black, for selling drugs on the street. And during the operations, one undercover officer was caught on camera declining to buy drugs from an Asian woman and waiting to buy from a black woman who was among those who were prosecuted. Yep, liberal San Francisco. It does happen here. And just north of where I'm sitting right now, in southern Sonoma County, the town of Petaluma, is the home to Lakeville Growers Petaluma Poultry Farm. And the brand name you know them by is Rocky the Free Range Chicken and Rosie Organic Chickens. And I have to tell you, that when they were first introduced back in the 1980s, I met the guy who owned the place. He gave me a whole box of free chickens. I've always had a soft spot for this company. But last weekend, 58 activists were arrested after they trespassed onto the property. There were a total of 200 of them, but only 58 got arrested. And they declared a necessity defense to rescue sick and starving chickens at this, what is supposed to be this happy free-range farm, appears to be a factory farm. Our secret camera footage shows thousands of birds crowded into industrial sheds. No evidence of the birds stepping outside. All but one of the rescued chickens were removed from activists by police and then sent to animal control rather than placed back on the farm. I actually think I have some rocky wings in the refrigerator that I'm planning to have for dinner tonight. I might need to make an adjustment there. Every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And top of the list today is Teresa Paris. Terry Paris in the People's Republic of Berkeley has not one but two monthly subscriptions. That's extremely generous. I appreciate that, Terry. Also, Cheryl Fleming kicks in $5 a month. And Jeffrey Stewart just renewed his annual subscription. Thank you, Jeffrey. So I'd like to invite you to become a subscriber. These days, I could really use your help. I've been losing subscribers and not getting as many new ones. And so if you'd like to help close that gap, I'd really appreciate it. Visit peterbcollins.com, find the menu tab, then click on Become a Subscriber. You land on the sign-up page where you can easily make a choice. $5, $10, $20 a month, or $50 annual earns you our bonus CD from John Dist called American University. Give me a mailing address in the continental U.S., and I'll be happy to send it your way. I want to mention one other great listener and subscriber who I hear from occasionally. His name is Jens Ivan Nielsen, and he lives on the picturesque island of Bornholm in Denmark. And I heard from him. He responded to yesterday's podcast where I couldn't figure out how Russia is trying to divide Star Wars fans in the United States. And he's pretty conversant in English. He writes, "Hi, Peter B.," and then moves into free verse. "Star Wars fans!" exclamation point. "Mel Brooks, Spaceballs." And then he provides a link to the YouTube page for that movie. "He is a spy from Russia!" exclamation point. "Oh, my. Trolls all over the world. Star Wars, The Last Plinkett Review. Oh, my. Please, Peter B., do not stop. My very best to you, Jens and Bornholm." Well, I'm very happy to hear from you, Jens, and maybe you can explain this one, because the New York Times has a lengthy report today about how your nation of Denmark has been fleeced for over $2 billion, and there's a guy named Nielsen who may be at the center of it. Now, the main suspect is a gentleman whose name is Sanjay Shah, a 48-year-old London-born financier who is accused of scamming Denmark by applying for tax refunds that he didn't deserve. And this relates to people who own stock in a Danish company, and the government automatically collects taxes on dividends paid by those companies. And then, if you live in the United States, you can get a refund of some or all of those taxes. Well, it added up to $2 billion over a 3 or 4 year period. Now, the lone employee approving those tax refunds was a lifelong civil servant named Sven Nielsen. So, Jens, do you know Sven? Jens and Sven, wow. They're both four letters. They both end in Nielsen. And Jens, if you've gotten even, what would it be, a kroner? I don't know what your currency is. But if you've gotten any money from Sanjay Shah, kick it back to the Peter B. Collins Podcast, will you? We'll just call it a foreign tax refund. I'm sure I'll have Trump's lawyers to back me up on that one if I get audited. All right, back to serious stuff. The Defense Department has a program underway called Insect Allies, a research program budgeted at $45 million over 4 years to transform agricultural pests into vectors that can transfer protective genes into plants in one growing season. This could be a miracle. Millions of insects carrying viruses descend on crops, genetically modify them to withstand droughts, floods, and foreign attacks. Are my chemtrails listeners perked up? Well, in the journal Science today, a group of independent scientists and lawyers raise serious objections to the research. They argue that the endeavor is not so different from designing biological weapons that could swarm and destroy acres of crops. A German engineer said, "Once you engineer a virus that spreads by insect, it is hard to imagine how you would ever control it. You haven't just released a transmissible virus, you've released a disease." the United States knows better than to return to a biological arms race. Now, that word return is well thought out because Dr. Jeff Kay gave us a podcast earlier this year revealing how documents showed that the U.S. borrowed technology that was developed by Japanese war scientists during World War II, and they used infected insects that were dropped to destroy crops in North Korea. So, yes, this would be a return to biological warfare by the United States, and I applaud the scientists for speaking up about it. I want to recommend a couple of articles that I don't have time to go into detail on in the podcast today, but Max Blumenthal, the very talented young journalist who has exposed a side of the story in the conflict in Nicaragua that you don't read in the American media, well, he published at a British site called The Canary an article exposing how both The Guardian in Britain and The Washington Post used a freelance reporter named Carl David Guetta Lusiak, who was so biased that he was offering only reporting that featured the point of view of the protesters who have aligned against the Ortega government in Nicaragua. And I do not pretend to fully understand this conflict or know who is right or who is wrong. But I know it's wrong for media outlets to use a biased freelance reporter and not critically check their work and make sure that it maintains the standards that these news organizations say they observe. Also, I want to commend my friends at Who, What, Why and reporter Brent Gregston for a piece that lifts the blackout on Libya. The article shows how the European Union is paying Libyan militias to intercept migrants, lock them up, and prevent them from crossing the Mediterranean to Italy or Spain or other shores. And there are several detention centers in Tripoli where thousands of desperate people are trapped inside. And this is all being done at the behest of European governments that are paying to try to prevent the flotillas of refugees who have been swarming across the Mediterranean in recent years. And in Gaza today, three more Palestinians were killed by live Israeli fire during a protest. That's the latest from Haaretz. The New York Times is reporting that a Hamas leader, whose name is Yahya Sinwar, is proposing a ceasefire with Israel. He says a new war is in no one's interest, certainly not our interest. Who really wants to confront a nuclear superpower with four slingshots? War doesn't achieve anything. Now, this sounds good, but in the current climate, where the Trump administration has a secret peace plan that Crown Prince Jared has put together that they're going to release and unleash in the next few months, there's no involvement with the Palestinians there. It's a cram down. And so while I'm happy to hear this from a Hamas leader, I'm not sure how it will be received in this jaundiced climate. And I want to recommend Scott Ritter's piece about Bibi Netanyahu's performance at the recent UN General Assembly. It's over at Truthdig, and I have linked to it in the show file for today's podcast. And finally today, as I teased a little earlier, there is a political ad that is making the rounds on social media that is an attempt to use reverse psychology to induce millennials to vote in the midterm elections. I'd like to play this for you and invite your comments. Send an email to peter@peterbcollins.com and let me know if you believe that this ad will have the desired impact.
Dear young people,
don't vote.
Don't vote.
Everything's fine the way it is.
Trump, that was us.
He's our guy.
Tax cuts for the rich? Hell yeah. I'm rich as fuck.
Climate change? That's a you problem. I'll be dead soon.
Sure, school shootings are sad.
But I haven't been in a school for 50 years.
I can't keep track of which lives matter.
Sure, you don't like it.
So, you'll like some meme on Instagram.
If the weather is nice, maybe you could go to one of those little marches.
You might even share this video on Facebook.
But you won't vote.
You young people never do.
But I do.
I do.
I do.
Midterms, primaries.
Every single election.
We'll be there. How about you won't?
Because we're a generation of doers.
Not whiners.
And we're doing great.
So it's not only reverse psychology, it is reverse ageism. Will it work? Send me your comments, peter@peterbcollins.com. Have a great weekend. I'll be back Monday with more right here.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.